I bid you a warm welcome to this week's Ox Talk for Tuesday the 27th of January 2026. This week's news items from the local papers were selected by Margaret Simpson and Leslie Court and recorded by Leslie Court and Hazel Hobbs. Before the news, we have a notice about the HIA. This week's edition was compiled by me, David Field. The copying and distribution of the USB sticks is by Michelle Lawful. Sunrise today is at 10 to 8, and sunset is at 4:15. On this day, in 1944, the siege of Leningrad was lifted by the Soviets after 880 days and more than 2 million Russians killed. In 1945, Soviet troops liberated Auschwitz-Birkenau in Poland. And in 1973, the Paris Peace Accords bring to an end the Vietnam War and the US military draft. Oxford City Council Home Improvement Agency, the Keeping Warm at Home Service. Oxford City Council's Home Improvement Agency is dedicated to helping older adults, residents with disabilities and vulnerable residents within Oxford City to live safely and independently in their own home. The Keeping Warm at Home Service is available to all older adults and people who are vulnerable and need help repairing, maintaining or adapting their home. The Home Improvement Agency provides the following services: small repairs, handy person service, repair and assistance funding, disabled facilities grants, and Keeping Warm at Home Service itself. Our Keeping Warm at Home Service is designed to support owner-occupiers or tenants with repair liabilities who are over 60 years and are on low income with disabilities. This is done by providing a free boiler service and minor gas-related repairs. Ensuring that heating systems are safe, reliable and efficient, this grant plays a vital role in preventing fuel poverty. Maintaining adequate warmth in the home helps protect residents from cold-related illnesses, reduces health risks linked to poorly heated properties, and promote safer, healthier living conditions. In addition, we offer temporary radiators and warm packs in homes without heating whilst our engineers carry out repairs. Furthermore, we have partnered with SGN, Scotia Gas Networks, previously SSE Scottish and Southern Electricity, who provide us with free carbon monoxide detectors, or CO detectors for short, to give out to our residents. Our team is CO aware, CO trained, and understands the importance of having a CO detector in a home. So we give out free CO detectors to older residents and to residents with disabilities. To contact Oxford City Council HIA, Home Improvement Agency, please send an email to hia@oxford.gov.uk, or you can call 01865 252788. That's 01865 252788. Oxford City Council Home Improvement Agencies look forward to supporting you in improving your home in the best possible way. And from Margaret Simpson, Chair of OxTalk, if any of OxTalk's listeners would like the help and advice, do get in touch with the Home Improvement Agency. These services are available to all older, that is 60 years or older, homeowners and tenants. If you prefer, ask a family member to contact Oxford City Council's Home Improvement Agency on your behalf. Stay safe, stay warm.
A new legal clinic is offering free advice to Oxonians in need. Based at Oxford Brookes University in Headington, the service has been launched by law students in partnership with Citizens Advice Oxfordshire. The new clinic aims to help people who cannot afford to pay for legal advice. It is open every other Wednesday and staffed by qualified solicitors and legal advisers who volunteer their time to support clients. Leslie Topp, an Oxford Brookes graduate and pro bono clinic coordinator at Citizens Advice, said students already volunteer at our clinic in Oxford's Westgate Library. Now they will be running a brand new clinic on the Oxford Brookes campus in Headington, making our services even more accessible. This will make an enormous difference to people across Oxfordshire, particularly those who find that paying for legal advice is beyond their means.
Oxford's twin city with Leiden in the Netherlands was formed at a meeting in the mayor's parlour at Oxford Town Hall on March 26, 1946. This year, it celebrates its 80th anniversary with a series of events, starting with a gala concert at the Town Hall on Saturday, February the 21st. Full details at https://rb.gy/odyunjandosj.org.uk. The Mayor, Alderman David Oliver, chaired the inaugural meeting, which was attended by representatives of 14 city and university sports. Others present included Albert Milhedo, who had travelled from Holland to set up links with English towns to foster friendship in Europe after the Second World War. Oxford and Leiden were thought ideal as partners because their populations were of similar size and both had waterways and universities. The link was established at first as the Anglo-Netherlands Sports Association. The minutes of that first meeting list the names of those present, including Molly Bateson, who served as treasurer for 40 years and became well known as an Oxford swimming instructor. It took just 2 months for activities to start a 70-strong party of Oxford swimmers, athletes and officials left for Leiden on May the 23rd at a return fare of £14 per head. On July the 18th, four members of the Oxford Civil Defence travelled to Leiden for a 10-day course on korfball, a ball game played by hand. It appears that Oxford had as much skill at korfball as Leiden had at cricket. Leiden cricketers visited Oxford in September and were heavily beaten by the Oxfordshire team. The minutes record, it was agreed that any future cricket exchange should be played at club level. Inspector W. Miller offering to hold coaching courses in the mornings. Strangely, it is said that that first cricket match was held on St. Giles. In January 1947, 28 Leiden hockey players and 6 cross-country runners, accompanied by their burgomaster, visited Oxford. Regular sports exchanges were held, and later non-sporting groups caught the twinning bug, leading to the organisation being renamed the Oxford Leiden Sports and Cultural Association, ANSCA. The name was later simplified to the Oxford Leiden Link. When the organisation celebrated its 50th anniversary in 1996, it was estimated that 10,000 people had taken part in exchanges. One constant reminder of the link is Leiden Square and its mosaic near the John Lewis store in the Westgate Centre. The Lord Mayor and Burgomaster take part in official Remembrance Day ceremonies in both cities in honour of war victims. The 80th anniversary concert at Oxford Town Hall on February the 21st at 7 p.m. under musical director John Lubbock will feature singers and musicians from both cities. The concert, billed as an evening of operatic highlights and orchestral splendour, will be repeated in Leiden on March the 7th.
Oxford City Council has announced the programme kicking off the year at the Museum of Oxford, as well as free entry days when, this year, visitor charges are introduced. An ambitious programme for 2026 has been revealed by the popular Museum of Oxford, which represents the city's history as well as reflecting its current reality. It hosts a huge range of activities and well-being sessions and educational programmes with special exhibitions and events scheduled throughout the year. This month, guided museum tours, called the Stories of Oxford Tours, will provide an introduction to the city's past on January 22nd and 31st. Events for elderly people and families will also be hosted at the museum, such as movers and makers dance exercise sessions, hands-on history, tactile experiences with real and replica historical objects, and Year of the Horse crafts and performances. Plus exclusive behind-the-scenes tours of Oxford's Grade 2 listed town hall on the schedule for several dates each month. A lunchtime talk series will begin in February, the first from historian Dan Poole on the life of Ensham-born anti-fascist Charlie Hutchison. This will be followed by Oxfordshire Museum director Carol Anderson sharing the story of the Ascot Martyrs, women imprisoned in Victorian Oxfordshire for supporting agricultural labourers' strikes. A day of sessions from award-winning author Bal Rai will also share the hidden history of Britain's first Indian fighter, pilot and former Oxford resident Hardy Singh Malik in February. April will see the start of a special exhibition celebrating 50 years of the museum, titled Our Oxford, 50 Years, 50 Stories, putting a spotlight on community groups and running until the end of March. From the end of January, the previously free Museum of Oxford will introduce an entry fee for all visitors to support its operations during a challenging time. According to the council, footfall at the museum had dropped by nearly a quarter from 2021 to 2024-5, and it took a loss of £77,000 last year. Protesters against the introduction of the fee from campaign group Save Our Museum said it was a worrying decision and could kill off the People's History Museum. The new entry fee will charge £4 for adults and £2 for children, and designated free entry days have been introduced for city and county residents. One day per month, either a Wednesday or a Saturday, will be a free museum entry day according to the following schedule: Wednesday, February the 18th, Saturday, March the 21st, Wednesday, April the 8th, Wednesday, May the 27th, Saturday, June the 13th, Saturday, July the 4th, Wednesday, August the 5th, Saturday, September the 12th, Wednesday, October the 28th, Saturday, November the 14th, and Wednesday, December the 23rd. Community groups have secured funding to help make their neighbourhoods more resilient to climate change. In Oxfordshire, 11 groups have been awarded grants to support projects addressing the impacts of extreme weather. Funding from the Community Resilience Small Grants Programme will support a range of climate adaptation projects, including rainwater harvesting systems, flood education schemes, and emergency planning workshops. Catherine Chesson, Director of Community Action Groups, Oxfordshire, said, "Community groups are at the heart of ensuring that Oxfordshire's residents are resilient to the impacts of climate change, such as extreme weather events. From rainwater harvesting at community gardens to raising awareness of local emergency plans, we're proud to support these fantastic groups to deliver locally led resilience work." The grants, which range from £100 to £1,700, are administered by CAG Oxfordshire and funded by Oxfordshire County Council with a total of £12,000. They are designed to help communities adapt to climate change by supporting practical activities and raising awareness. Judy Roberts, Oxfordshire County Council's Cabinet Member for Place, Environment and Climate Action, said, "We know that one of the best ways to mitigate against the impact of these increased incidents of extreme weather is to support activities and events that empower local groups to act. We received a great field of applications and we're delighted to be able to fund an exciting range of projects. We hope these grants will help some amazing organisations create new connections and raise awareness in order to support new people, local businesses and organisations to take climate action." Oxfordshire has experienced 20 significant flood events, 12 named storms, 8 cold snaps, 4 major heat waves, and 3 periods of drought since 2007. Projects set to benefit from the funding include a film night and workshop in Banbury, a local resilience briefing in Henley, and flood education booklets in Stevenson. Workshops, educational leaflets and new infrastructure will help residents better prepare for weather-related emergencies. Other projects include a yurt for shade at a wellbeing garden and support for personal emergency planning. Sustainable Didcot will use its grant to run a month of climate resilience events focused on water, reflecting the town's high risk of drought and flooding. Meanwhile, the Hendreds Environment Group will use its funding to design and distribute educational materials about the village's emergency plan, helping residents understand how to prepare for and respond to emergencies in advance. The full list of grant recipients is available from Oxfordshire County Council.
Major waste crime is getting out of control, an Environment Minister has said as she acknowledged the need for a different approach to tackling the problem. Baroness Susan Heyman of Olloch told Parliament the government do not believe that the status quo is working and was looking at making changes to combat the illegal activity that blighted communities. The Labour front bencher made her comments as she branded mass dumping of waste at the side of the A34 in Kidlington as utterly appalling. The clean-up of the 150-metre-long waste tip at Kidlington is due to get underway next month. The Environment Agency declared a critical incident over the 20,000 tonnes of illegal waste, which reached 12 metres in height. Speaking at Westminster, Lady Heyman said, "The government is committed to tackling waste crime. The Environment Agency assesses all reports of waste crime and deploys its resources against the offending that poses the greatest threat, risk and harm." The Environment Agency recorded 176 active, high-risk, illegal waste sites at the end of March 2025. As with all criminal activity, understanding the true extent of waste crime is difficult due to its often covert nature. Pressing the government, Liberal Democrat peer Lord Russell said, "Organised waste crime is out of control and there seems to be a reluctance to expose its true scale." He added, "Will the minister commit to using remote monitoring and AI to survey the country and drive enforcement, hypothecate landfill taxes for clearing up sites and end the perverse practice of charging the Environment Agency landfill tax on the waste it removes?" Lady Heyman said, "The government are committed to introduction of digital waste tracking and the analysis of data that this brings will enable us to provide a significant asset for regulators and enforcement bodies in the fight that we have against waste crime. Additionally, the Environment Agency is looking at other technology-based opportunities to measure the level of waste crime. That could use the potential of satellite-type technology and machine learning. We are providing the Environment Agency with extra targeted funds." The minister said prosecutions were only one part of the picture. "It is a serious criminal activity that blights our countryside, which is why, as I said, the status quo is not acceptable, and we are seriously looking at what we can do to make the improvements that are needed."
Oriel College at Oxford University is celebrating a landmark anniversary as it turns 700 years old. 21st of January marked 7 centuries since the institution's medieval foundation in 1326. Oriel is the 5th oldest college at Oxford, following University College in 1249, Balliol in 1263, Merton in 1264, and Exeter in 1314. Lord Mendoza, Oriel's provost, said in a statement, 700 years ago, King Edward II confirmed Adam de Brome's foundation of Oriel College with a royal charter. The longevity and continuity of this college and its work is astonishing. Few institutions have endured for so long, and even fewer have remained devoted to the same cause. Our means of inquiry have changed. Our understanding of the world is different, but the ends to which we as a college direct ourselves are much the same. Of course, this has not all happened by accident. For 700 years, each generation has decided that this college must be protected and nurtured. its conservation has required careful and diligent custodianship. To celebrate the anniversary, thousands of alumni are invited to events throughout 2026, including a dinner at the British Ambassador's residence in Washington, D.C., and a service at St. Paul's Cathedral in London, with Evensong, performed by the College Choir. The programme of events began on the 22nd of January with a dinner attended by members of the college and guests. A strategic vision for Oxford's future up to 2045 has been set out in a major planning document. Oxford City Council's final draft of the Local Plan 2045 outlines how the city will address key challenges, including housing, economic development and climate change. The plan proposes 40% affordable housing for developments of 10 or more homes, prioritising social rent, and sets out targets for biodiversity net gain and more green features in major schemes. Alex Hollingsworth, Cabinet Member for Planning and Culture, said, "Previous rounds of public consultation have helped us to set out a vision for Oxford in the draft Local Plan 2045 that addresses our housing crisis, addresses inequalities across our communities, and responds to the climate crisis, all the while respecting the city's heritage. This is a key decision for Oxford, as it will shape how our city develops over the next two decades." After the Local Plan 2036, all councils are required by the government to use a standard method to calculate housing need. According to this method, Oxford's housing need is at 21,740 homes over the planned period, or 1,087 per year. However, the council has identified capacity for only 9,267 homes due to constraints such as flood zones and SSSI protection, leaving an unmet need of 12,473 homes. The draft was approved at a cabinet meeting on January the 21st.
Accompanying the police on a major human exploitation raid was as heart-pounding as one might expect, not least when we were sailing past the morning commuter traffic. Upon invitation, I went to Thames Valley Police HQ on January the 14th to watch the force in action. Others might have been bleary-eyed at 7 a.m. on a Wednesday morning, but I wasn't, having frozen half to death as I de-iced my car, as well as blaring James Bond anthems on the journey as I ensured I was in the right frame of mind. Nor did the Thames Valley police officers look drowsy, fully kitted out and ready for the intense operation that was to follow. That morning, they were heading to Oxo Hotel, formerly Eurobar, to raid the premises as part of an investigation into human exploitation. Months of work had gone into it already, and I could detect some nerves, although whether that was a fear of something may go wrong or just normal operation jitters, I couldn't say. A detective chief inspector at the station was friendly, as were all the other officers, including those who drove me to the raid, and it was a particular thrill as we switched on the flashing blue lights and in a four-vehicle convoy passed the miles of commuter traffic heading into Oxford. How many times have I been stuck in a queue like those poor souls? How many times have I wished I had my own set of police lights? Countless. Having quickly parked close to Oxford Castle to ensure we were together, we went on to the hotel. Officers moved quickly in what can only be described as orderly chaos, searching the premises from top to bottom. As it was early in the morning, some guests were clearly woken up when police knocked on their hotel door, as further evidenced by their tired expressions. There was further commotion as police arrested a man for obstructing after questioning. Having cleared the address, I was whisked over to a nearby property where one of the leading suspects was being arrested. The man was taken into custody on suspicion of conspiracy to arrange or facilitate travel, of another person with a view to exploitation. The inspector in charge of the operation seemed pleased with how the initial stages had gone, and I had to agree. They'd been targeted, organised, and dealt with any difficulties efficiently and with care. Of course, what is now likely to follow will be a lengthy investigation and possible court process.
Three Oxfordshire MPs have called for a meeting with the Environment Secretary about Thames Water's proposed 150 billion litre reservoir south of Abingdon, citing escalating costs and concerns for bill payers. Ollie Glover, Leila Moran and Charlie Maynard raised concerns in a letter to Emma Reynolds after the estimated cost of the South East Strategic Reservoir option, SESRO, jumped from £2.2 billion to £7.5 billion. In the letter, the MPs said, "In light of the spiralling costs, we are increasingly concerned that a number of questions around the suitability of this proposal have not been sufficiently assessed ahead of the start of the development consent order process." Mr. Glover criticised Thames Water's financial management. He said, "Their record of financial mismanagement is well documented and has badly eroded public trust, and now the estimated cost of the proposed reservoir is spiralling out of control. Despite the scale of the financial risk, it is bill payers, not investors, who are expected to foot the bill. This is not a fair allocation of risk, particularly when the company's past decisions have contributed to its current financial fragility." The MPs have requested an urgent meeting with Ms. Reynolds to fully discuss their concerns before the government makes a decision on whether to proceed with the reservoir plans. Construction of a massive new reservoir near Abingdon could create 1,800 construction jobs if approved. The 150 billion litre reservoir would be southwest of the town and would secure water supply for 15 million people, including Thames Water, Affinity Water and Southern Water customers. Consultation started in October and was due to conclude on the 23rd of January. The consultation period was slightly extended as a result of problems with the online document. The UK's largest water company has now launched a £5.7 billion tender notice for the newly named Whitehorse Reservoir. It was previously called South East Strategic Reservoir Option. The new reservoir represents the largest water infrastructure investment in a generation. The project is one of nine new reservoirs that would provide water security for the UK, supporting the government's agenda for 1.5 million new homes, unlocking economic growth and providing long-term resilience against climate change. The company is now seeking a main works contractor to design, build, test and commission the reservoir. The proposed reservoir would supply water locally in Oxfordshire and Wiltshire through to Hampshire and London. Chris Weston, CEO of Thames Water, said, "The reservoir represents one of the most significant investments in water infrastructure the country has seen in decades. Once built, it would be one of the largest in the country, providing water to millions, supporting new homes and development, and creating an exciting new destination where people can unwind and connect with nature. Careers will be made and built through the reservoir's construction, with thousands of jobs created, supporting families and communities across the southeast. As well as water storage, the reservoir will create a place for people and a space for nature," according to Thames Water. "Once open, it would attract visitors and boost tourism, supporting the regional economy for the long term," says the company. "People would be able to enjoy a new visitor centre and cafe, sail and paddleboard on recreational lakes, fish from dedicated angling piers, enjoy education spaces and adventure areas. The project would create thriving habitats with wildlife ponds, wetland mosaics, woodlands and rich grasslands. Roles created during and after construction include ecologists, geologists, archaeologists, engineers, electricians, construction managers, park rangers and sailing instructors. Thames Water is already connecting with schools, colleges and training providers to help line up and develop a reservoir-ready workforce. Feedback gathered during the consultation will shape the reservoir plans and inform a development consent order application ahead of submission to government later this year. Should the project be approved, water is set to be available for use from 2040.
A national campaign is calling for clearer language and understanding around mental health, urging people to distinguish between everyday emotions and clinical mental illness. Rethinking Mental Health is a new campaign launched by West Oxfordshire-based company Sinolos CIC. Founded in 2010 by Whitney author Barry Ingleton, Sinolos is a social enterprise organisation that helps people struggling with mental health issues. The new campaign challenges the increasing use of clinical language to describe everyday emotional experiences that are not mental health conditions, warning that this trend risks blurring public understanding and undermining the seriousness of genuine mental illness. Mr. Singleton, who lives with bipolar disorder, said, "This is not about silencing people or dismissing suffering. It is about listening properly. Not all emotions are illness, but all emotions deserve to be heard. When we understand that distinction, we protect those living with serious mental illness while giving everyone else permission to experience life honestly without assuming they are unwell." The campaign emphasises that it does not dispute the reality of mental illness or the need for timely support and treatment. Instead, it seeks to reintroduce balance and improve national understanding. The campaign says that distinguishing between everyday emotions and mental illness does not diminish compassion but strengthens it, allowing people to feel understood without being automatically labelled and preserving specialist care pathways for those in genuine need. The Rethinking Mental Health Together campaign has identified three priority areas. Firstly, there are calls for a clear principle in the Mental Health Act that distinguishes between natural emotional experiences and mental illness. The second focus is on prevention, as well as early understanding, and the third priority is language and public understanding. The campaign warns that the unregulated use of clinical terms outside professional settings can cause confusion and inhibit honest conversation. It is claimed this trend can increase anxiety, slow recovery, and impose further strain on already stretched mental health services. Teachers, parents, clinicians and support workers have increasingly spoken about a shared unease around the increasing usage of clinical language to describe everyday human emotional experiences that are not diagnosed illnesses, according to Mr. Ingleton. To encourage public engagement, there will be a live event in Whitney on March the 6th. The event will bring together voices from education, health and the community to discuss these issues. It will also be streamed online to ensure broader participation.
Rick Stein has issued a heartfelt statement as his fans show the celebrity chef support. The 79-year-old cook was born in Churchill and spent his early years growing up on a farm in the Oxfordshire Cotswolds. Since leaving Oxfordshire, his business empire has ballooned. Four have opened in Cornwall, there's a restaurant in Millionaire's Row at Sandbanks in Dorset, and there are other restaurants across the south. And so has his TV career, launching many cooking shows combined with travel, taking him across the globe, from India to Thailand and Sweden to Amsterdam. His latest series is Rick Stein's Australia, a six-part BBC series exploring the country's evolving food culture, from Sydney's vibrant scene to the outback. On his Instagram page, the chef thanked fans for the positive reaction to the new show. He said, "I do feel a little bit privileged here in the south coast of New South Wales on this glorious summer's day, and I know it's a little bit cold and inhospitable back home. But I would like just to thank everybody for all their great messages about my new series, Rick Stein's Australia. It's so heartening to know how well it's going down. And it was always the intention, I have to say, to start the series in the middle of winter and make everybody want to come to Australia." Householders in the county are being urged to take simple steps to prevent scams and cybercrime after 14,000 reported a fraud in the last 12 months. The warning comes from Thames Valley Police and Crime Commissioner Matthew Barber following the launch of a new national fraud reporting service, Report Fraud, which has replaced Action Fraud as the national reporting centre for all incidents of fraud and cybercrime. Mr. Barber said, "Fraud is the most common crime affecting our communities, with 14,000 residents of Thames Valley reporting a fraud in the last 12 months. Anyone can be vulnerable to fraudsters, regardless of age or digital confidence, but there are steps you can take to reduce your risk." He encourages residents to take three key steps: pause before responding to unexpected requests, strengthen digital security, and report suspicious activity. Mr. Barber added, "Firstly, don't rush to act. Scammers typically try and create a sense of urgency in their communications to get you to act quickly. If you receive an unsolicited or unexpected communication, whether by text, email, letter, phone call, or in person, do not respond immediately. Requests for action, personal information, or attempts to build trust without a clear reason may indicate fraud or cybercrime." He advised residents to improve their digital security with strong, unique passwords, a password manager, and two-factor authentication on important accounts like banking, email, and social media. Mr. Barber continued, "Two-factor authentication, in particular, is one of the most effective ways to protect your online accounts, as it requires a second step, in addition to your password, to access an account. You should look to activate two-factor authentication on your most important accounts, email, banking, and social media. It only takes a couple of minutes to do, and once enabled, you'll instantly be safer online." Mr. Barber insisted that those who fall victim to fraud should not feel ashamed, as it will make people reluctant to come forward. He said no one should feel shame for being targeted by criminals. Victims First offers free practical and emotional support for victims of all crimes, including cybercrime and fraud, living in Berkshire, Buckinghamshire, Oxfordshire and Milton Keynes. Call 0300 1234 148 or visit www.victims-first.org.uk for more information or support. The Central Fraud Unit at Thames Valley Police has also designed a fraud protection toolkit. Report Fraud provides a contact centre and online reporting tool for individuals and businesses.
Nearly a quarter of adults in the South East say they can't leave home without their headphones, and the trend could be causing permanent hearing loss. New research has revealed the growing attachment people in the South East have to their devices, along with the potentially harmful consequences of daily use. The study found that 23% of Brits in the South East cannot leave their house without their headphones, with the same amount rarely considering the risk of hearing damage, despite using headphones every day. Susanna Nito, audiology director at Specsavers Oxford, said, "Prolonged exposure to loud sounds through headphones can cause permanent damage to the delicate structures inside the ear. This can lead to issues such as hearing loss and tinnitus, which are often irreversible and can worsen over time." A poll of 108 adults found that some listeners were willing to turn back up to 6 minutes into their journey if they realised they'd forgotten their headphones. On average, users wear headphones for nearly 90 minutes a day, 30 minutes longer than the recommended daily limit. 16% of those surveyed admitted to regularly ignoring volume warnings on their phones, with 7% saying they increase the volume even after receiving a warning. With fitness-related New Year's resolutions in full swing, Ms. Nato warned that more people may be using headphones during workouts, often at unsafe volume levels. She added, "It's important to be mindful of how loud and how long you're listening for, as the damage isn't always immediately noticeable." The research also found that 29% plan to lower their volume in the new year, while 16% want to reduce headphone use. The 19% said they intend to book a hearing check they've been putting off. Headphones are especially essential during travel and exercise, with 20% dreading to go without them on train journeys, 24% on planes, and 17% at the gym. Sebastian Descarfo, audiology director at Specsavers Cowley, Hayfield Hill, Wantage and Whitney, said, "No matter if you use over-the-ear headphones or earbuds, exposure to louder sounds over time can be equally as damaging. Noise-cancelling headphones are a better option, as they allow the volume to be lowered while also improving audibility where there is background noise. The most common reasons for headphone use include listening privately, 32%, relaxing, 27%, and blocking out background noise, 25%. 4% admitted they typically listen at high or very high volumes.
A Channel 4 comedy star has been given a new position at Oxford Brookes University. Chancellor of the University, Patterson Joseph, who is well known for his role in comic series Peep Show, is to serve as the official patron of the Science Bazaar. The flagship public engagement festival is to take place on Saturday, February the 21st, and will welcome thousands onto the campus. The Science Bazaar will include several zones, including places for theatre and a gallery featuring artwork exploring the ethical questions behind cutting-edge research. These sit alongside popular favourites, including the Tech Zone, Healthy Life Zone, Green Zone and Brick Cafe. Mr. Joseph said, "The Science Bazaar is a wonderful celebration of curiosity, creativity and learning. I'm thrilled to support an event that opens doors for young people, brings research to life and shows how science and the arts can connect in powerful ways."
Radiology errors cost Oxford University Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust more than £750,000, according to new data. Figures obtained by Medical Negligence Assist show that was paid out in compensation to patients in the period since 2020. The Trust has issued an apology to patients involved in the incidents and said it was now working closely with patients, families and carers to resolve any compensation claims. It is understood payments made as part of these settlements are handled by NHS Resolution, which represents all trusts across the country rather than Oxford University Hospitals, OUH, itself. Radiology is a cornerstone of modern medicine, supporting everything from emergency care to cancer diagnosis. While millions of scans are performed across the NHS each year without incident, errors can have serious consequences, including misdiagnosis, treatment delays, and avoidable patient harm. Across the health service, radiology negligence claims have risen sharply. Over the past 10 years, the number of settled cases has increased by about 30%, making diagnostic imaging one of the fastest growing areas of medical negligence claims. Between 2020 and 2025, 11 claims linked to radiology errors were brought against Oxford University Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, with 6 cases resulting in settlement. The highest volume of claims was recorded during the pandemic in 2021-22, when 6 were lodged. In recent years, NHS reviews of radiology services have highlighted pressures caused by workforce shortages and increased demand, with the Royal College of Radiologists consistently warning of a shortage of consultant radiologists, leading to the risks of backlog and avoidable diagnostic mistakes. Radiology errors can result from a range of issues, including human factors, inadequate supervision, or outdated technology. These mistakes are often classified as diagnostic errors, which are among the most serious safety incidents because they can directly affect a patient's prognosis. Medical Negligence Assist obtained figures on how much Oxford University Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust has paid out to radiology error claims since 2020. Over the past 5 years, the Trust has paid out £756,581, with the highest amount coming in 2021-22. NHS Resolution says 2,163 claims have been made against NHS trusts across the country since 2020. Of those, 1,520 were settled, with trusts paying £231,680,410 to claimants. Many claims stemmed from a range of primary injuries, including cancer and even fatalities. However, the main type of injury associated with claims was unnecessary pain, accounting for 261 claims. An OUH spokeswoman said, "We cannot comment on individual cases. However, we sincerely apologise to all of the patients who were involved in these incidents. We are committed to delivering high quality, safe and effective care to the people who we serve. We work closely with patients, families and carers to resolve any compensation claim at the earliest opportunity. We are continually looking at how we can learn and improve working in partnership with our patients, families and carers is central to this."
The City Council has vowed to ensure the survival of the covered market in the wake of strong criticism of its nightmare management from the Oxford Cheese Company. Oxford City Council has said its investment in the historic marketplace will ensure the market remains a vibrant and popular destination after the cheese seller said the implementation of the local authority's master plan would cause substantial disruption to business yet again. The business's director, Robert Pouget, said the situation was a nightmare. "The redevelopment of the marketplace, which dates back to the 18th century and is Grade 2 listed, will deliver a new communal space, improved entrances, as well as new flooring and improved lighting. The council has since confirmed that work on the site won't begin until 2027 at the earliest." A spokesperson added, "Continued engagement with traders is planned to deliver the plan at minimum inconvenience to traders. As part of the overall £8 million scheme, Market Street is being part pedestrianised and the service yard is being reorganised. The City Council has also said it's investing more than £3 million on the market's roof and for internal refurbishment and decorations." A spokesperson for the authority said, "The covered market master plan was announced in 2023, and the almost £8 million investment will ensure the market remains a vibrant and popular destination. We will be working with all traders and stakeholders throughout the process, and meetings to discuss the next steps are planned for later in the month. However, the iconic cheese business is reducing its hours and is blaming the substantial disruption from the council's master plan. A spokesperson said, "We're switching to survival mode, reducing our opening times and limiting our retail presence to 4 days a week." The shop will be closed to retail business on Tuesdays, although college orders and online orders will be processed, while it will be open 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Wednesdays and Thursdays and 9 to 5 on Fridays and Saturdays. The cheese business added this latest disruption was simply the latest in a long line of challenges they have faced. A spokesperson said, "We've survived COVID, the Jesus College conversion, which virtually closed access to Market Street from Gorm Market, no apologies or any compensation from the college, and the pedestrianisation of Market Street just recently. All of the above were beyond our control and meant resilience from our staff and our customers. Now we face another challenge as the council embarks on its master plan for the covered market. Don't hold your breath, but be positive." In a dig at the City Council about its support for business, the trader sarcastically said, "They know what they're doing." Oxford City Council's local elections will go ahead in May as planned, the government has confirmed. It was among 63 councils who were given the opportunity to ask to postpone their elections if it would give them more capacity to deliver local government reorganisation. While 29 councils will have their elections cancelled, 34 of them will hold elections as planned, the Secretary of State Steve Reid announced. Oxford City Council leader Susan Brown wrote to the Secretary of State highlighting capacity concerns and recognising that most councillors wanted the elections to go ahead. But the Secretary of State responded, asking her to clarify the council's view on whether the local elections should be delayed or not. The leader had faced criticism for her muddled response, with opposition councillors arguing that the letter gave the government plenty of excuses to cancel the elections without explicitly asking for it. Ms. Brown said she wrote to the secretary to reconfirm the position that elections should go ahead. The government have now confirmed the City Council will be among the 34 holding elections in May as planned. West Oxfordshire and Charwell District Councils confirmed a few weeks ago their local elections would go ahead as planned. Under local government reorganisation, two-tier authorities in places like Oxfordshire will be scrapped and replaced with new unitary councils with different boundaries. It is not clear how these councils will look or how many there will be in Oxfordshire. The government is expected to announce what the new councils will be in the summer. There will be shadow elections for the new authorities in 2027, and the new councils will go fully live in April 2028. Housing Secretary Steve Reid told MPs, "I have carefully considered arguments made about capacity, reorganisation and democracy, and I'm grateful to everyone who took the time to express their views. I can now confirm my decisions to the House. I have decided to bring forward legislation to postpone 29 elections. In all other areas, council elections will go ahead as planned, many having offered no evidence that it would delay reorganisation in their areas. This means of the 136 local elections across England that were scheduled for May, the vast majority will go ahead as planned." He added, "To those who say we've cancelled all the elections, we haven't. To those who say it's all Labour councils, it isn't. I've asked, I've listened and I've acted. No messing about, no playing politics, just getting on with the job of making local government work better for local people." The City Council has been contacted for further comment.
Police have warned that some drivers have been incorrectly fined for speeding on some A roads and motorways, including in Oxfordshire. Thames Valley Police issued a statement on behalf of the National Police Chiefs Council on Friday, January the 16th, to warn motorists that some have been given a speeding penalty when they shouldn't have. The joint statement issued for the forces policing areas in Oxfordshire, Berkshire, Buckinghamshire, said a very limited number of drivers may have been affected by an anomaly impacting the way national highways cameras identify speeding cars. The problem reportedly lies with the way the cameras interact with their signs and signals, leading them to incorrectly detect some drivers as speeding after the limit has changed. Approximately 2,650 total erroneous camera activations on impacted roads since 2021, according to government data, though National Highways is continuing its investigations. The anomaly impacts 10% of the strategic road network made up of the motorways and A roads in England. Policing is working with National Highways to identify and contact motorists who have incorrectly received penalties for exceeding variable speed limits on the road network. Those affected will be reimbursed any fines handed out and any points removed from their licence where relevant. Forces are also working to ensure that the issues with the tickets being handed out will not happen again. The statement said, "Policing has taken the decision to pause speed enforcement on the strategic road network using data from the affected National Highways HADECS cameras until we have full confidence that no one will be incorrectly prosecuted. Motorists are reminded that we continue to enforce speeding on the network as well as the rest of the UK through other unaffected methods, including mobile camera sites, average speed cameras, and marked and unmarked police patrols. We are working to ensure that policing and the Crown Prosecution Service, CPS, resume prosecutions from this system with confidence in the evidence while also meeting our obligations to ensure a fair process. There is no data yet announced for when speeding enforcement through the affected cameras will be back in place, but it has not been revealed which cameras are currently not being used for speeding enforcement." The statement added, "Policing enforces a range of offences, including speeding, on the strategic road network through a number of tactics, including mobile camera deployments, road policing patrols, and average speed sites. This remains unchanged. Anyone in Oxfordshire affected by the issue will be contacted by Thames Valley Police in due course, and no other action needs to be taken."
Dame Prue Leith, judge on the Great British Bake Off, has announced she will be leaving the show. Known for its baking challenges, the show sees contestants give their all in a bid to impress Dame Prue and fellow judge Paul Hollywood with their cakes and pastries. Announcing the news on her Instagram page with a picture of herself next to Hollywood, Dame Prue said, "The show has been a fabulous part of my life." The 86-year-old, who lives between Chipping Norton and Moreton in Marsh, has been a judge on the show for 9 series and judged more than 400 challenges, but is taking a step back. Her statement read, "Bake Off has been a fabulous part of my life for the last 9 years. I've genuinely loved it and I'm sure I'll miss working with my fellow judge Paul, plus Alison and Noel and the teams at Love Productions and Channel 4. But now feels like the right time to step back. I'm 86, for goodness sake. There's so much I'd like to do, not least spend summers enjoying my garden. Whoever joins the team, I'm sure they'll love it as much as I have. I feel very lucky to have been part of it."
New Oxford United head coach Matt Bloomfield thinks his side deserved to win in their goalless draw with Bristol City. The Ewes were held to a 0-0 scoreline in Bloomfield's debut as boss despite a late charge at the Kasam, which saw chances for Stan Mills and Kieran Brown both denied at the death. When asked if his team could have won the game on Saturday, the new boss said, "We definitely could. I thought we were excellent. Second half we created multiple opportunities We had the momentum. It just felt like a matter of time before we found that goal to put ourselves ahead. We've come close so many times, but unfortunately, it wasn't quite to be for us today. In terms of performance endeavour, that all-in-together feeling with our supporters, I have to say thank you to them for the welcome and the atmosphere they created second half. Especially when you're attacking that end, I know what it's like as an away player when Oxford are attacking that end, so thank you to them for their welcome. A first clean sheet since October, when the youth beat Derby County 1-0 at home, was one positive to take away from the stalemate. Loads of good bits that come out of it, a clean sheet, the first one in however long, so we have to retain that and get more clean sheets to get the wins that we need between now and the end of the season. In the 92nd and 93rd minute, if you create two big chances like that, more often than not, the game will go your way. It's obviously just really frustrating for us that it didn't quite go that way today. Bristol City are a team who have been in fine form, very championship team, scoring goals for fun really recently, and we've limited them to very little. Against a good Robins team, a point is nothing to sneer at, but after being the better team, there is a disappointment that the U's could not capitalise. The way the players have worked this week, they deserve to win today. I'm really disappointed for them that they haven't got one to celebrate, because from Monday morning through to Friday afternoon, they've been excellent. We're not going to get carried away, but there were loads of positive signs here today that we want to use moving forward. The only way to win matches as a football club is to be all in together. We need to earn the right to win these games.
A blind cat named Bumpy is relying on the kindness of strangers for a second chance. Believed to have been born without properly formed eyes, Bumpy has never been able to see, but that hasn't dampened her affectionate nature. She loves human company, melts into cuddles, and greets everyone she meets as a friend. A Just Giving page has been set up by Cat Protection Charwell to help give Bumpy a happy and pain-free life. The fundraising page reads, "She navigates her world with courage, trust, and an endless supply of love." Bumpy is quite possibly one of the most affectionate cats we've ever met. She doesn't know she's different, she just knows how to love. Bumpy needs an operation to remove the eye tissue to prevent pain and infection, as well as to be spayed. Though surgery won't restore her sight, it will ease her daily discomfort and help secure her future. By donating, you're helping give Bumpy the chance to live a happy, pain-free life filled with warmth, care and love, her Just Giving page said. People can support Bumpy by donating at justgiving.com/page/charwell-cats-bumpy.
Two university professors have been awarded the first ever Green Future Fellowships, securing £3 million each to advance pioneering research into climate solutions. The funding will support breakthroughs in battery technology for electric aircraft and next-generation solar power. Professor Robert House of Oxford's Department of Materials and Professor Moritz Reed of the Department of Physics are among the inaugural cohort of 13 Royal Academy of Engineering Green Future Fellows. Each fellow will receive £3 million over 10 years to address multiple aspects of the climate crisis through engineering solutions. Professor House said, "The long-term Green Future Fellowship funding will allow me to launch an ambitious new research programme to develop novel battery concepts to meet the stringent performance and safety requirements for aerospace. This is high-risk, high-reward research, could transform the way we travel by air by making aeroplanes quieter and less polluting at airports, reducing their greenhouse gas emissions in the high atmosphere and increasing the range of electric flying taxis. Professor House also plans to use the funding to develop a battery four times more energy dense than current lithium-ion versions. The project could have a broader impact on electrical vehicles, EVs, and heavy-duty transport. He added, the technology could also have a wider impact on EVs, as well as heavy goods, construction and mining vehicles, improving their power and driving range. Meanwhile, Professor Reed will focus on scaling up organic photovoltaics, OPVs, carbon-based lightweight solar cells, for commercial use. While laboratory versions have already surpassed 20% efficiency, commercial OPV panels remain at only 8 to 9%. Professor Reed said, we know organic photovoltaics work very well in the lab. The challenge is achieving the same at scale in factories in a way that is both fast and affordable. This is what climate urgency demands right now, and that is what we are solving. Focusing on industrial relevant materials and proven processes, we aim to scale organic photovoltaics, the greenest and most equitable form of solar energy, reaching low, middle and high income countries alike. He will use automation and machine learning develop manufacturing processes for 20% or more efficient OPV at an industrial manufacturing scale.
A county town was mispronounced on a Saturday quiz show by a well-known actor and writer. Steve Pemberton, known for the BBC's The League of Gentlemen, appeared on The Weakest Link on a recent Saturday night. Quiz host Ramesh Ranganathan asked, in shopping, what B is the name of a designer outlet village located by the A41 in Oxfordshire? Pemberton responded by saying, Bicester. Ranganathan responded with the correct pronunciation. One Facebook commenter said, can't believe Bicester Village was a question on The Weakest Link tonight and Steve Pemberton couldn't pronounce Bicester correctly.
That was the last news item for this week's Ox Talk. If you have any comments or feedback about Ox Talk, then please ring Margaret on a new number, 07496 062280, and do please leave your name and contact or phone number so that we can return your call. This edition and previous editions of Ox Talk can be found on our website, oxtalk.org.uk, and you can listen there or you can download an edition to listen at your leisure. And it's goodbye from me, and I wish you a peaceful week. Goodbye.
Notice to listeners of Oxhawk who may wish to use an Alexa smart speaker to access our service. To listen to Oxhawk on an Alexa device, you can use the talking newspaper skill. You will need to first enable the skill. To do this, simply say, Alexa, enable talking newspaper. Then, to listen to Oxhawk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open talking newspaper.
Welcome to your talking newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have any problems listening to Oxtalk using an Alexa device, it could be due to the way that your device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set it up in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Oxtalk and we will try to help.